Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Let's go back to the end of that text, and we'll cover a couple of things, and we'll move on to chapter 3. What did I say? I'm sorry. Yes, 1 Timothy would be where you would need to go. We'll get to 2 Timothy eventually. Eventually, I emphasize that. But first part of the chapter is about praying for the brothers and sisters of the congregations. It's also about God's grace and mercy. Verse 8, he begins to talk about the church itself. He first talks about men, that they need to take on this role of leadership. It's their responsibility. And so he asks for them to take that lead. Go to verse 9, and I just want to read 8 through the end of the chapter. So let's read this together and we'll talk about it. He says, I desire then that in every place that men should pray, lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling. Likewise, also the women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness, with good works. Let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. For Adam was formed first, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet she will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. All right, so let's kind of pick up where we were. So we talked about verse 9, 10, and 11. So in verse 10, this is, I think, the key phrase, just going back to what we're talking about, that we consider our apparel and how we come dressed for worship, for life in general. We ought to do what? We ought to do what's proper for those who profess godliness. So whoever we're talking about, as a child of God, what is the image we're trying to portray? Godliness with good works. And so I think that really encompasses the meaning of that first part. And then he turns his attention from the way of dress to what? He says, let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. So again, what is Paul saying directly? I mean, he's not dodging around anything, is he? He's pretty direct. I think you've got to really hunt to try to get around his statement here. He as an apostle, does he have the right to command?
Yes, he does.
He does. And so he says that he is he does not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. That's his command. Again, this idea of submissiveness, we've defined this in the past, but we looked at this when we looked at the letter to the Ephesians. But what does that term mean in the original language?
Come under the authority of?
Yes. And it's to place oneself under the authority of. It's a voluntary thing. You are placing yourself under the authority of someone else. And that takes what?
Humility.
And meekness. And sometimes it takes a lot. Sometimes it's, and that depends, right, who we're putting ourselves under. Some people make it really easy. Some people make it really difficult. But the command remains the same, right? It's not based on the person. It's based on you and your relationship with Jesus. So again, he's really clear. Verse 12 is very clear. He says, I do not permit a woman to teach, number one. When he says to teach, what's the meaning there? What does he mean by not to teach? Ever? And we got a lot of school teachers who'd be wondering about that, wouldn't they?
So we have to consider like the context, right? Where does he not want us to teach?
Great idea. So where does he, I agree with you. What is the context? What teaching is he talking about?
The worship service.
The worship, I would say it extends to any activity of the church. Okay? Not just worship, but it extends beyond that. that she is not allowed to have what? Authority over a man. So she is not permitted, according to Paul's statement here, not to teach men in the church.
If that's the conduct of a woman who is professing godliness, is that desire to be submissive to her husband and to the role that God has put her in?
Yeah. So I want to take just a minute. I won't belabor this point. I'll try not to. What are the attacks against Paul's statement here? What are some of the ways people attack him? Okay, so one attack is what he's saying here is just cultural. It's for the moment of the first century. That's just the way their culture was built. And so he was just telling them to live like the culture. Okay, just from the text here, can that be a possible explanation? Could it be something that as the culture changes, then this teaching would change and it would evolve to match whatever culture you're in? What would exclude that understanding?
Verse 14.
Okay.
Adam was not deceived.
So it really bases it on two things. The first thing actually is in verse 13. What's the first thing? Adam was formed first. It's the order of creation. And that in just the simple order of creation, God established a hierarchy. He formed the man before the woman. And in doing that, God set roles and set who had the responsibility of leadership. And that would have been Adam. That's his first thing. So it's the created order. Verse 13, what's the second one? Verse 14. So the fact that she was deceived and he was not. Now, this is not saying in any way that Adam did not sin, is it? No, it's not in regards to sin, but it is actually in regards to the deception. That she was actually deceived by the serpent. That's what Paul seems to be implying. And Adam, what he did knowingly. And so Paul bases his instruction not on this is what the culture expects of you, so live to the culture. He bases it on the created order and the sin, the first sin of mankind. And so he says, for those two reasons, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man, but to be in submission. That's Paul. So number one, the culture argument just really does not hold up to real scrutiny. All right, so what about the other argument comes? Well, it's not culture, but this was just exclusive for a particular congregation. Is that true? And why would that not be true? Okay, it's to Timothy. Those who would argue it, I agree with you. I'm trying to give you their side of it. I think would say, well, but Paul, Timothy was in Ephesus, and so this was a message for Ephesus. Why would that not be the case from the context?
Same reasons.
Go ahead.
I mean, we're all still descended from Adam,
So the first argument would still hold true for that because he's going back to creation. There's another reason too. That's a good one. Look at verse 8. I desire that in every place men should pray. In every place. What's the context here? That's everywhere. That's no matter what town you're in, no matter what part of the world you're in. This is what I am commanding you to do. Let me show you a different one and explain one that tries to get explained away that he says something very similar. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. This is not one we've looked at in this study, but I just want to mention it. 1 Corinthians 14. And let's go to, let me tell you what verse I want to see. Let's go to verse 33, okay? So Paul is doing what in 1 Corinthians 14? He is explaining the order of worship, okay? And he's giving rules for the way worship is to be conducted. I'm not going to get into all those in this particular study, but you can go back and read it and spend some time thinking about it. But I do want to note what he says beginning at verse 33. With all of this discussion, he says, for God is not a God of confusion or chaos, but of peace. Or the ideal there is not the lack of tension, but when he uses the word peace, what is he inferring? Order. Order, not chaos. The opposite of chaos and confusion. I know sometimes we can use that word peace to mean a calmness of spirit or lack of tension. That's not what that means there. It's the idea of, I don't want chaos. Okay? As he continues on. It's an important phrase, and I'm going to come back to it. As in all the churches of the saints. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. The women should keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but what? Should be in submission, as the law also says. All right, and he goes on to talk some more about, you know, if they have a question, they should do that in the home. So this verse has been attacked a lot in saying, well, this is a verse for a group of Christians who were chaotic, they weren't doing things right, there was sin there, they were a mess. And so Paul's just trying to clean up Corinth. And some of that's true, right? Corinth was a mess. They were sinning in different ways, and Paul had to deal very firmly with them. But is the verse 34 a command only of Corinth? No, because verse 33, and remember, the verses were not there originally. This was all part of one statement. So Paul introduces the statement, women should keep silent. How? As in all the churches of the saints. Now, in this particular argument, he does not go back to creation, but he does argue from what standpoint? This is universal principle. As in all the churches of the saints, the women should do what? Keep silent. And he explains what he means by that when he says, for they are not permitted to speak, but to do what? To be in submission. And that's the key term there. Again, what is submission? To put oneself under the authority of someone else. And so women, going back to 1 Timothy chapter 2, are to be in submission to the men of the congregation, and particularly the elders, but to men in general. I do not permit a woman to do what? To teach or to exercise authority. So this idea that he just means one particular group in the first century, the Corinthian church, is just simply not true. Yes, ma'am.
So why can we speak of the Bible class?
That's a great question. So it comes back to, I believe, 1 Timothy chapter 2 is where you have to go to get the explanation for this. So, again, verse 12, what does he say? I do not permit a woman to teach. So, speaking up in class, are you necessarily teaching? Now, could it become that? This is a danger that I think we ought to pay. We don't pay as good a close attention to this always. But she's not permitted to do what? To teach. Asking a question is different. But I have been there when the sister, out of love in her heart, went from asking a question to teaching. And you've got to be careful about that. He says not to teach. Right? And what's the other thing? It's to exercise authority. So by asking a question, is she going over the top to exercise authority? Not necessarily, right? Got to be careful what opinions you're giving, right? And how you're giving them. It's a lot about attitude and how you present it. So what about the do not speak? Does that disallow women to speak at all in the church? Yeah, so you're going to have a real problem if that means absolute silence. I do not think that's what he means.
What about children? Teaching children?
Okay, so that's a great question. So again, that that's kind of a loaded question, so let me deal with that. There's some levels to that one that I can't deal with real quickly. What is the context? What is she not to do in 1 Corinthians 14? What were they doing that he's disallowing?
Speaking in
tongues and prophesying. They were teaching. They were publicly teaching. And Paul says, I do not permit a woman to speak. What he's talking about there is utilizing the gift of prophecy with men present. So, I do not think it disallows women to speak up or ask a question in class as long as they do not violate 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12. Yes, ma'am.
Are you saying a woman was speaking in tongues?
Mm-hmm. They were women speaking in tongues.
They were given spiritual gifts too?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He says your daughters will prophesy. But there was a proper outlet for that. Philip's daughters were prophets. They were prophets. But there was a proper outlet for that. There were times to do that and times not to. That's the whole point of 1 Corinthians 12 through 14. There are times to utilize those gifts and times not to. He said if there's no one to interpret a tongue, keep silent. Don't do that. So what is he doing? He's limiting your use. So it's just like anything in life. There's a structure which we exist in and to use those. Should a woman teach? Yes, in the proper context. Should she teach in worship? No. But what about, as our brother Ian brought up, good question, what about children? Is a woman permitted to teach children?
Not in worship
service. Okay. I agree with you. Why is that allowed?
Because she's not having authority over man.
There you go. Children are in subjection to their mothers and to the adults of the congregation. And so her teaching children is not a violation of that. Now, when does that change? She would not be
because they gave you that permission to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would fall in line with that. But the men are limited in their giving of authority to what God has ordained, though. Right, see, that I agree with you, but we just have to keep in mind the men, we can't go from that to say, okay, it's okay for a woman to preach because we gave you that authority. Because that's extending an authority that men do not have. Does that make sense? He said that allowing a woman to teach in a Bible class is also given by the authority of the elders, right? And that's true, right? The elders extend that authority to our Bible class teachers. They lead and direct the men in the congregation if you don't have elders. But their authority, their allowance of extending authority is bordered by what God has allowed. Does that make sense? I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying. So any authority we exercise, even the elders, are limited by what? By God. They can't go beyond what the scriptures say. So they're limited within that with what they can do. Roger.
Yeah, I guess for me, the veils thing, I mean, it seems to be the same language to me. Same sort of language, you know. That I mean, there are eternal reasons he gives for the veils. And
can I hold off on not doing that discussion tonight? That's another great discussion. We'll have that in 1 Corinthians. What is it? 8. We'll do that sometime. I don't want to do the veils tonight. Yes, ma'am.
At what age that is the teaching of the youth?
Great idea. Great idea. And there are going to be differences of opinion about this. Should I give you mine? I'll give you mine and what I believe. And then you can weigh it and you can study it and evaluate it for yourself. So that authority, When would it go from a woman having the authority to teach a male to her not being allowed to? So before I give my opinion, I'll lay it out. I'll give you mine, but what do y'all think? What'd you say when you're baptized? Okay. I agree with you. Why is that? Well, they were still like 30-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're about Jesus' age, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, nobody wants to offer this one, do they? Everybody's scared. Y'all scared? What?
We don't
want to
teach.
I deserve that one. Okay, so... I would say it would be, so when would you consider a child being beyond his parents' authority?
25.
We're going to get lots of different answers, aren't we? Some moms, that's 35, 40, isn't it? But let's just say.
Is when they want to be.
Yeah.
And when they start feeling like they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I can tell you from the Jewish culture, which is what Jesus lived in, this is, and then when Paul lived, I think they give us at least some insights of how Paul would have viewed this, and also from us. So when would a Jewish boy become a man? When he had his bar mitzvah, right? 12 to 13 years old. Now, do boys at that age act like adults?
No.
Do men who are 25 act like adults sometimes, right? They struggle. But that's the age that a young man in their culture would have moved up. So I think you have to at least think about their cultural influence. So to me... going back to what Ms. Tara said, I think when a young man has made the decision to become a Christian, he's taking on that responsibility of being a Christian. And I think at that point, he needs to have a male teacher.
Did you also use the same, if, I don't know how to phrase it, if they haven't made the full decision to become a Christian, to be baptized, but the conversation is there and the thought process is there that it might happen, within, you know what I mean? When those discussions are starting to happen, even if the action hasn't taken place, is that a good launching point too? Are women not the people to go to anymore? Is that stuff that you turn over to a guy?
That would be my opinion on it. Okay. I think... I know there's some good Bible people, Christians, who did, probably somebody in this room disagree with me about it. But for me, that seems to be the within what the Scripture is trying to get us to understand, that once a young man has become a Christian, he needs a male teacher. Now, that puts an onus on the men, right? You need to step up and teach those groups. We need to have more men willing to teach those young men. They need that guidance in their classes. And far too often, the ladies are a lot more willing to teach than the men. And that's something on us guys that we need to think about. I have two questions, Lisa, and then I'll come back.
So how old was Timothy whenever
Lilith? My guess, I'd be guessing... I believe he's well beyond that at this point. Who now? What now? What?
Oh, Aquila and Priscilla. I thought they were both women.
No. That's a husband and wife. And you remember, even in that example, they take Apollos aside and teach him privately. We're not, I think we make a jump when we think she took the lead to teach him. I think she was there. Aquila is there. That's her husband. And I'm certain that she would.
Bible
Bible study with people.
Mm-hmm.
Both a man and a woman participate in that teaching process, but under the submission of her husband.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Lynn.
Linking to what you're saying, attitude has got so much to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've talked to Lance a long, long, long time. As a child nears and starts asking those questions that you want them to ask, and you want them to have a ready answer, and you don't want to, oh, I can't talk to you about that. We got to go get Joe Blow up here. It doesn't happen when you split. There's a process, and it needs to be.
And that's why.
Parents know about it, and the elders know about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say was, everybody at that point, if you have a young man who's beginning to ask a lot more of those questions, I'm not saying she needs to get out of the class, but you need to start having a conversation with mom, dad, and the elders. They all need to get involved at that point.
And a lot of times it's the other way around. You've got a 13 or 14-year-old who's they're nowhere near it. I mean, they're just
mm-hmm. And what do? We just keep working with them, right? And hopefully they come around to that kind of thinking. And boys are, just being honest, typically later. Girls start thinking about this stuff on average a lot earlier than boys. Boys deal with immaturity, just being honest. And we've got to push them into that maturity. Sometimes it takes a while. But we keep working. But my view is, once he becomes a Christian, definitely by that point, you need a man teaching that class. Yes, ma'am. My understanding, and I'll go back and research it, but at the bar mitzvah, he makes a step, and that's in his teen years. Now, there are other things associated with 30 that he was still growing, but he moved out of childhood into manhood at 13. Disagree with that. I think that may be true, but that's a parenting issue. I don't think that has anything to do with this particular discussion. So
that the child is in your classroom and they're that age, that's where the correlation is that we're teaching those children, as women are teaching those children. That's where the connection is for me.
You have something? No.
Young man becomes a Christian about 13, 14 years of age. And at that point, he should not be put into a class being taught by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean he's not taught by a woman. My mother.
Yeah. Mom still has a lot of influence.
And straighten myself out pretty quick. And that, so you have to put the context of what you're talking about. In a church setting, in a group setting, where a woman should not be dominating over a man.
So
but in a family
Let me explain that difference, because I think there's an easy correlation to that. An example is, if you go to, we'll look at it eventually, but the letter to Philemon, look at the relationship of Philemon and Onesimus. Onesimus is a slave to Philemon. And Paul points this out in the letter. They have a particular relationship as master and slave. And Paul says that Onesimus needs to submit to Philemon. And that's true, as a slave in that relationship. But then as Christians, when they're in the church, that doesn't work. And he tells Philemon that. He is your brother when it comes to the church. And so that is a different setting. And so I don't disagree. I think that's true. I mean, any mother who has a 16-year-old, even if he is a Christian, is still going to be in the home teaching him. But that's different when it comes to the church. And that's a different setting, different situation, different rules.
I was asking about that. If a child's not, like he's 13 years old, but he's not a Christian, and he's immature, and he's not even thinking about being a Christian, that's what I'm asking. I totally agree when a person is baptized, when a child is baptized.
Yeah. And
my question is, when they're 13 or 14 years old, but they're really immature and they're not even interested in that, you know, making that commitment, or even knowing that there is a commitment to be made, still not supposed to teach them because they're at that.
So I would say that's a gray area. I don't know if there's a clear answer to that. I know the safe area is for a man to man up and go and teach that class. That's my opinion. I know other people disagree, and that's fine. You don't have to agree with me about it. But that would be how I would feel comfortable. I think it's time for a man to start teaching. And so I think that's as a church. But again, I understand there's different ways to view that. And it is a gray area. I agree with that. If he's not a Christian, how do you deal with that? Well, you know, you're going to have to study it and then come up with yours. I'll tell you my opinion, and please don't shoot me on the way out the door. Yes, ma'am, Becky.
Well, I know it is a deal when this is scripture. Can you talk more about the Jewish culture of the Bat Mitzvah? And, like, was that a biblical, or did that come after the law was given? Like, where did that start? Or what exactly is it other than a man's ceremony?
So, I haven't studied that in a while, so let me say it off the top. I'm not the expert on that at all. But my understanding is that developed through the Jewish culture. That was tradition. My only point in bringing it up was that was the culture Jesus lived in. That's what he grew up in. And that's the way the Jews basically viewed it. But
did you go back as far as Jesus' time?
Oh, yeah. They were, yeah. Let me say this. That's my understanding. I need to go back and reread it. I may go back and be like, oh, I said that wrong. So let me just say, that's my understanding of it currently. But again, I always say, you should go back and look it up. Don't take my word for it.
I want to shift gears a second, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'm not going to get as far as I wanted.
In this text, there is a grammar situation that I think you need to take note of. It says, not but. Those terms are very significant in Scripture. A lot of people say, well, women shouldn't wear jewelry, shouldn't have your earrings and gold chain. That's not what he's saying in the text. He's saying that should not be the thing that they emphasize.
Which is what Peter emphasizes, right?
And when he says, not wear, you know, don't wear gold, he's not saying it's forbidden. But it's not the purpose of your attire. And you had those terms through Scripture. Every once in a while, we had that not but relationship. Not does not disallow, but the more important thing is what follows that but.
Yeah, so good comments. Anything before I move on? Dwayne.
Well, I was just going to say, we have to be careful that we don't start expecting, okay, you're now this certain age, so therefore you should act this way. That's not true. I have known 18-year-old boys that were smarter than me, but I've also known 40-year-old men that a lot of times still acted like they were 12.
Yeah.
And women, too. Although I will admit that women are usually more mature than men.
But usually.
The point is, each person is different.
Yeah.
And that's something that is decided on an individual basis about when they reach a certain level of maturity when it comes to the church or when it comes to life. But so while what we're looking at is something that is very important, we need to be careful and remember that everybody is different.
I agree with that somewhat. I agree with that. Everybody is individual, but these are general rules that apply to everybody. I think we just got to be careful about getting over into you can individualize these things. You can't.
And you're right. There, you have to have rules.
Yeah.
And you have to say, okay, when you turn 18, you're legally an adult. And that's true. But that doesn't mean that you still can't make mistakes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As well as the other way, you know, where somebody that's 12 can be smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
Be more mature than half of us. But it's something that you do your best on.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Everybody is different.
And we have to give our young men time to grow and develop. But, yeah, so good comments. All right. I didn't get to chapter 3. I really wanted to get to chapter 3. We'll go to that next week. Let's just, as we look into chapter 3, if you'll keep reading, we're going to talk for a few minutes about bishops or overseers and deacons and how God, through Paul, has laid out who these men were to be and how they're to be appointed. And then as we close out chapter 3, he'll talk about godliness, and it's the thing we're all striving toward, is being godly and being the kind of people God really wants us to be. So if you will, go ahead and read chapter 3, spend some time thinking about it, and we'll come back and pick up in verse 1 next week. Great comments, great discussion. Hopefully I don't get stabbed in the back on the way out. Just kidding. Y'all are wonderful people. But we'll keep studying and learning. Again, thank y'all for being here. We'll go ahead and dismiss class now and prepare for our devotional time.